I let the past be past, but I live the values I have gained there. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you the thought for today. And do you know what today is? Today is the 30th. And tomorrow is the 31st. And then there's a new year. Now you've only got these 2 days to live in the past. Because when January 1st comes, there'll be no past. It'll all be today. In fact, it should be that right now. But we'll give you a little leeway of 2 days. So, and how can I give you leeway? I can't. You have to give it to yourself. I let the past be past, but live the values I have gained there. Now, we were just discussing the past here at our breakfast table with some of the illumined beings who are attending the Christmas seminar, I Am Spiritually Illumined. And these illumined beings were reading some materials that were given to them, and they were thinking to themselves, hey, that's good stuff. That's true. That's wonderful. And then I roared like a lion and said, no. We do not talk about the garbage when we want to talk about the food. I'm going to present dinner to you, but I want to find out first who's going to take out the garbage. Thanks a lot. You know, let's put our attention on the food and maybe even its preparation. Now, I'm going to have a wonderful dinner for you tonight. We're going to have all of these beautiful veggies and all these beautiful other things that make the dinner so delightful and so charming. And we're going to top it off with a hot fudge sundae with a cherry on top. But I realize that that is not sensible. I realize that that is not sensible. So being the pragmatist that I am going to do like every child would love to have his parents do. And what is that? Serve the dessert first. So if we have the hot fudge sundae first, we will thoroughly enjoy it. We will enjoy it with such gusto and such joy, maybe even two of them, but one at least. So we have this wonderful hot fudge sundae, yes, with the chocolate and the fudge on it, you know, that is hot. And a cherry on top of that. Maybe sprinkle some nuts around it, too. Ooh, so good. And so I'm going to present this hot fudge sundae at the beginning of the meal. And then after that, we will go on to the other steps. We will have our vegetables, and then we'll have our other things, whether it's meat or whether it's corn or whether it's, that's a veggie too, but or whatever it may be. And then after that, then we'll have our salad. And after that, then we'll have a slice or two of cheese. The cheese is supposed to help you to digest your food and clean your mouth and keep your teeth bright and cheery. And this is what the Italians have done for years. You've never seen an Italian with a grubby mouth, have you?
No.
Really? You never have?
No.
You've seen Germans with grubby mouths. Because, oh, yes. Because Germans finish their meal with mashed potatoes and other things.
Cake.
And cake. Oh, yes, lots of cake. And the Italians usually finish it with a glass of wine and some cheese and a piece of bread or something. What's that?
And the French, too.
And the French also. Mm-hmm. You said the French too, and I thought that was another country I missed. But the French also, right. So they have done this for many, many years because they found it very salubrious to their health and to their selves. Okay. Now, we let the past be past. The past is eating the hot fudge sundae. So we put that first. So now that's past. And then we eat whatever we want, whatever we like. What else would you like with your hot fudge sundae? And you say, that is the silliest thing I have ever heard. Children would love that meal, but adults would find it very bad. Well, that's because adults are not using their head. If an adult would go to a nutritional doctor, and the doctor would say to them, what sort of diet do you have? And they'd tell the doctor, and the doctor would say, well, I would think that you're doing this all wrong. You eat far more food than you need. You eat far more food than you need. So I would recommend that first you have your hot fudge sundae, and then you have a 20-ounce glass of water, and then you eat your dinner. And you will eat very little, but you will eat good stuff. So you just have choice items on your plate, and you nibble them down, and you're done, and you've been very happy with it. Now, we've read about the mice who were raised on a starvation diet. They weren't really starving, but as far as what we think they need and what they thought they needed, they were starving. But they lived three mouse lifetimes, because they didn't have to have their body go through all that activity and worthless activity and carry around excess weight and things like that. They lived very handy, very healthy, and very beautiful lives. However, we are not living in the past, but we are taking the values that we've gained there. Did you get any value out of being a child? Obviously not. You know, did you get any value out of being a child? The first value you should have got was to have dessert first, you know, at every meal. Isn't that right? Isn't that what children will do? They're smart. Now, why does a child want to do that if that is not beneficial to a child? Why would they want to do it? Children will seek out certain things they need in their diet by going and chewing their crib apart, you know, eating the paint off of it and all these other things, because they like that strychnine and they like that lead poisoning and they like all those things. It makes their body immune for future activity, you know. Who knows what they're going to chew up in the future? But that's being a little silly. But nonetheless, it's not so silly as it sounds. The children, as I told you this story before too, in Africa, were living on this river. And their trash from the house flowed down the creek into the river behind their house. And the toilet was there and everything else. And the children lived reasonable lives. And they were happy. And then the WHO came along, the World Health Organization. And they said, we cannot allow this to happen. We've got to inoculate these kids for all these terrible diseases that are in their system, And then we've got to clean up this sewer back here and clean up this river that they're playing in and so forth. Well, this is not nice to report. They gave the kids the shots. They cleaned up the sewer, and all the kids died. All of them. Mm-hmm. Because they took away the immunity they had to these things that they were familiar with. And, of course, they took away their playground. We were in Ghana, and we were driving from the man's house out to the country club where we ate and back to his house. And as we did this, we went by a river. And the river got wide in a couple of spots. And wherever it was wide, the kids were in there, diving in there and playing and having a ball, just having a good time. And then where it was narrow, they didn't, but where it was wide, they did. And the houses had their little thing running down from the house right into the creek. You know, they didn't have septic tanks. And they probably even picked up the water from the creek and brought it up and used it for drinking and for washing their dishes and stuff like that, you know. That's marvelous. But those children are doing reasonably well. I have not done any research and figure out how many live and die and how many do this, but I would imagine that they're immune to virtually every type of bacteria or disease that might be prevalent in that area. And we, in our wisdom, want to take it away. However, have we learned nothing from the values? Have we learned nothing from what we have seen, who did in, with one group? They were in the kindness of their heart. The doctors were giving out of the seriousness and the love, and probably free, because most of WHO's activity is done by volunteer doctors. And they went there with the kindness of their heart, but they destroyed a whole village of children because they took away their immunity. And now they, of course, learned a big lesson by that, But are they still taking away the immunity of the children around the world? Yes, they are. They're going around giving shots for things that children must learn to be handling by themselves. In the early days, I don't mean too early, like 1700s, 1800s, across the world, they didn't have vaccines and vaccinations for these various things, and children did die, but the thing is most of them lived, and most of them built up a very healthy immunity. And of course, as they became parents, they passed this immunity on to their children. And you see, we want to learn from those values. We want to learn from them. When I told you a story yesterday about the guys in the concentration camps who learned to play golf and the piano without a golf club and without a piano, and because they were not going to be driven crazy by solitary confinement, by not being able to get out and do things, they created their own world, and they lived it, and they were not alone. They were just a few that were reported. And they had little signals they'd use to tap on the wall because they could not communicate with each other. And then they would learn the signal, and they'd somehow pass the signal around and let each person know that one tap meant this, two taps meant this, a tap and a scrape meant this, you see. And then they would talk to each other in that way. You see, wow, that's complex. Well, it was necessary. This human interaction was necessary for humans. Now, there were many divine people in prisoners of war camp, too. And these divine people did not need others to give them an understanding of who they were. They went within. And they talked to the presence within themselves. And they listened. And they became more and more and more and more astute. And you know, because they had nothing to divert their attention, they learned from the values that they had been building in themselves. And they disappeared. They disappeared. Nobody knew where they went. The guards went to the cell, and they thought, well, I guess they took them out last night. Maybe they died and didn't report. And they don't ask. They don't ask. Just another cell is available. And these people, the guards have no interest in the inmates. They were merely doing their job. And if someone was there, great. If someone's not there, great. And if they could give somebody a hard time, they loved doing that because it added a little bit of sparkle to their day, you know. Terrible thing, but that's what goes on. So that's the past now. Now we're living in the present. And what values have we gained from the experiences of the past? We're not saying that any of those things were bad. We're just saying those things show us where and how we can use our own ingenuity to its highest and greatest potential. That's wonderful. Now, each of you have not been in concentration camps. You have not been in dire circumstances. You have not had people holding a gun to your head and requiring you to do things. And you have not stood up for principle. And you have not done a lot of stuff. And God's a dunk, you know. Thank you, inner presence. You know, I'm glad that I never had to do that, that was not my role. But you did many other things. And you learned from these many other things. And in learning from these many other things, you are now ready to apply what you learned. And one of the things you learn is when I ask you a question, if it has a yes and no answer, give a yes and no answer. Please don't ad lib. You can ad lib all you want when you're not in a teaching situation. But when you're in a teaching situation, you don't ad lib. You give the information that you want. See, Ellen knew he was going to bark before he barked, but she didn't go over and get him. She knew that, and she also knew that the rules say that whenever we're going to give a talk or something, the dogs go into the bathroom. And when we don't follow that, well, then we get barking and screaming and shouting and hollering and upsetting our... see, Ellen, the balls are falling down on you. So, what have we learned? What values have we gained? And are we applying the values? Sylvia can tell us from word one, our philosophy from top to bottom. And Christina, she can tell us our philosophy very seriously. And Rhonda, she will demand that we listen to her tell us the philosophy. And each one of you are like that. I could go right around the room. But what benefit is it for you to go out and talk the philosophy if you're not living it? And if you're living it, what inspires you to go talk it? You see, if you're living the philosophy and you're getting the benefit from it, why go out and tell it to anybody else? Just live it. And that's what I recommend to all of us. We just go out and live it. Because I would like to offer you this shot in the arm. You are immune to the world when you're living the philosophy. You're immune to all of the world's little nuances, you know, all the little foibles, and you don't pay any attention to the world's expectation of you to, oh, everybody's going to see that movie. You should all see that movie. It's all crime and misery and blood and guts. You know, you should see it because that's the current movie and everybody's talking about it. Well, bully, bully, you know? And you should certainly read the newspapers because in the newspapers they tell you all the bad things that are going on in the world. Well, why don't we have a newspaper telling all the good things going on in the world? You see? And in small token, some publications are like that. Mine were like that. And I was okay, but I was no great shakes because I wasn't pulling the other game. But I was just fine for what I wanted. Now, what about you? Are you ready to live what you have learned? Are you ready to take the values that have come to you over your life and apply it with the teachings that you have gained and that you say you believe in? If you are, you don't have to tell anybody anything. You don't have to act superior to anybody. I was listening to you talking at the table here, sharing with the others your philosophical understanding of some of the concepts that we were talking about, and you didn't sound like a teacher. You sounded like someone, I am speaking from my knowledge and I know these things and you should understand what I'm saying because I know what I'm talking about. And yeah, that's awfully hard to accept. If every teacher taught like that, there'd be no classes. There'd be no students. They'd run away. They'd commit suicide. They wouldn't put up with that sort of thing because that's just too heavy. That's just too heavy. The teacher presumably always teaches by saying, what do you think? What is your attitude? What is your life? I like to teach that way, and I attempt to teach that way, but I'm not always successful in following what I like and attempt to do. But I still work at it. I don't try it, though. I do it. But you are a challenge at times, and I'm sure that every teacher who has ever taught finds their classes a challenge from time to time. And this only brings out the best in the teacher. So I thought you'd like to bring out the best in me. I let the past be past, but live the values I gained there. Now let's each one of us, as the new year is approaching, we don't have to review the past. Whatever we have learned in the past sticks out of us like a sore thumb, you know, pee-choo-choo-choo, it's all over us. And now let's just live it. Maybe some of the things we don't want to live, we throw them away, but choose. Choose what you have gained from your past and let it be what you live in the present. It's a wonderful thing. And you're wonderful, all of you. You're supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I love you. I love you. I love you.